Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
On WGR.
You know, I'm kind of mixed up right now because, and this is, I think, for the most part, how last year went. Here you have Sal, who is on the station a lot. I mean, he's on during the game on Sunday, and then he's on Monday morning for at least two hours. He's probably on the morning show Monday, and maybe every other day. And then we get to Wednesday afternoon. We're talking to Sal every day, like all year. And then we get to the season, and when the game happens, we don't talk on Saturdays because we're not here on Saturdays, and we just go like this long stretch. And by the time Sal makes his first appearance of the week on our show, which is now, Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline, the game is like ancient history. We're almost to the next game. I mean, if you covered the team today, we're talking about Miami, not Pittsburgh. So I don't know what we do about that, Sal. But I was, you know, thinking about questions for you for a few days here, and now it's just like they're all kind of dead. Like the game's over, long over.
Yeah, well, you know, Tuesday's the day, my day off. I recharge a bit. Team is off. So it kind of comes down to Monday for you guys. And, you know, if you need me, I'm available. But you guys have a pretty packed Monday. So, you know, it's totally understandable.
I'm just going to call you at home, I guess. I don't know what to do.
We could revisit fitting you in on Mondays if we wanted. But I'm all right still revisiting some of the stuff from Sunday, Sal.
Sure, I am too.
The offensive line especially. Like, how big of a deal? I mean, we had a guy speaking in all kinds of exaggerations and hyperbole about how awful it is. It was awful on Sunday, I think I would say. I don't know if you agree with that terminology, but they had a very tough day at the very least, if it wasn't awful. How surprising was that? And how alarmed are you about the struggles they had just blocking four? The Steelers blitzed only one time in this game, and they still got a crazy amount of pressure on Josh Allen.
I think the answer to both questions for me is somewhat, which is somewhat surprised. I thought they'd do a better job. I thought they'd maybe have a better plan. But, you know, if you watch really, maybe it didn't come down, and after rewatching a lot of stuff, maybe it didn't come down as much as planned as it just did come down to execution and people losing one-on-one battles. Sean McDermott says that. I think people chalk it up to, or Brian Daboll says it, people chalk it up to coach speak. It is true. I think they just lost one-on-one battles a lot, and that's what's disappointing. And that's what is somewhat alarming. Like, come on now. I mean, got to be better than that. I don't know where that came from. Last year, we think about the job Darrell Williams did on T.J. Watt. I think for the most part, the offensive line was pretty good last year. I don't think they were the best line in the league. They certainly weren't the worst. But that was not a good performance. And so I would say I was somewhat surprised that that happened. And I'm somewhat alarmed. I'm concerned. That's where I would be because I think teams now might take a look at that and they're going to be kind of licking their chops going, ooh, we're going to get after this team. We're going to get after those guys. So now it comes down to, well, you better prove now and show that that's just not going to be the norm so teams can't tee off on you.
I'm not sure how to make this into a question that you probably could answer, but like the guy on the line that maybe embodies this is Dawkins, who had a tough game. And we know, as you know as well as we do, the offseason struggles he had with his health. And like, I don't know, like what we want to know is he still affected by that? But like, how could you tell if he is, like, this could be an interesting year for him, right? Because sometimes in sports guys don't catch up. The season starts and they're not 100%, whether that's a, you know, an illness or an injury, and it just gets away from you. So we've got to hope that that's not the case here.
So McDermott on Monday said he did not feel that was the case, right? He said no, to his knowledge, you know, as far as he knows, like that he is not suffering any sort of impact from that. And I would tell you that, you know, one of the responses is, oh, that's great that he's kind of not feeling it. The other response is, oh, so if he's not, then he just got beat. Like, right. Then what's going on here? Right. If that's not contributing to him getting beaten, then what is? Like, why did he have such a rough game? So I think that's a very valid question right there. But you're right, Mike, because I'll use AJ Epenesa as an example of what you just said. It wasn't an injury, but once we got to the season last year, how much did we hear it was too hard for him to kind of get where they needed him to be, weight-wise and all that? Once you're in the season, you're in the season and you're preparing. Now, this might be a little different issue, obviously, conditioning, all that kind of stuff. But you're right. I think that if there are any impacts going on with Deion Dawkins that either A, Sean McDermott's not aware of, or he's not willing to disclose or whatever, but it is true that that's happening, it might be a while. It might even not be, he might not be 100% all season. So I think that's something we have to monitor and take a look at. Now they go down to Miami where it's going to be 90 degrees on Sunday.
Yeah, I think McDermott or any coach might want to say, just like Dawkins would, I think, Sal, you'd want to say that it's not that.
Right.
You know, and that's, again, I think you know, like, I'm not saying it's he's not being truthful. It's just like, that's a situation, I think, where the coach would want to believe. You know, it's not just talking to the media. It's just, that's what you want to believe, because it can be hard to know, even for the player. Like, why can't I, you know, do this? What's going on here? So it's hard to sort of pinpoint these things, but, well, he's important.
Yeah, I would think if that is the problem, I wouldn't think you'd hear about it until either he plays through the whole season and is compromised, or they make a move at the position, and then, you know, McDermott maybe says to explain it, like, he's just not right, and we couldn't keep going like this. You know, Sal, mm-hmm. I suggested very early in today's show, and you tell me if this is a real overreaction at this point, looking at this next game, if Dawkins is playing like he played on Sunday, I might make a move there. I mean, I know Spencer Brown is a rookie who didn't play last year and a third-round rookie at that, but I don't think that I can keep rolling Dawkins out there if he's going to play like he played against Pittsburgh.
I don't think it's an overreaction. I think that you'd obviously, not that you're suggesting, you know, the first series or anything. I mean, you have to give that time. You have to see what that looks like. But sure, if you go on through the game and it's 90 degrees and he's struggling and he's having the same physical struggles that he did against the Pittsburgh Steelers, committing holding penalties. He had 3 holding penalties himself on Sunday. If that's happening, then you have to start giving some serious thought. I mean, yes, you paid him to be your franchise left tackle. It doesn't mean he can't be going forward, but it could very well be we got to get him right before we can put him back out there.
So what else about this game, since we're all game for talking about it a little bit more? Like, They were pretty good defensively, of course. Pittsburgh didn't even score until the second half. You had the how about the punt? You want to talk about the punt? So did you guys figure out, Bulldog, did you figure out if the punter was too shallow?
I don't know. I saw he was barely more than 13 yards from the line of scrimmage. Right? The line of scrimmage on the block punt was the 23, and he was just behind the 10-yard line at the snap. He then, by the time he tries to kick the ball, is 4 yards further upfield. And I just don't know. I don't have access to lots of punt video to, like, know. And I even, like, I Googled and looked around, and it's like about 15 yards deep is what it is. So I don't know if 13 with a little extra is about 15 or not. Like, so he might have been shallow, and he might have taken, like, more space to try to get the kickoff than normal, because that all just – somebody called us late yesterday, Sal, and said he was lined up way too shallow and that he was slow, you know, moving into the ball. And I'm not sure how true that is. Do you have an opinion, or do you know anything about that?
As far as the shallowness, I wouldn't say. I don't know for sure. I do think he seemed a bit slow in that to get rid of the ball. It looked like he took a stutter step to me. Looked like he took a quick little step and then 2 more steps. And that can be the difference in getting that ball blocked. I think one of the questions is, you know, what? I don't know where he's supposed to be punting there. If he was wanting to angle, maybe that had something to do with it. You know, a lot of times you can literally just line up in a certain way, a certain depth, and have those steps because you're trying to angle it a certain way, left or right. It didn't seem like that was the case. It was kind of right up the middle. So I'm not positive in that. I did break down the play. I posted the dots. If you guys saw the dots yesterday, you know, we're not allowed to do the all 22 in film review, yes. So I can't post that. But I actually like doing the dots anyway.
I think
it shows you a lot.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it really kind of gives you a good look. I've watched that play from the back angle a good 10 to 15 times. I've watched the dots. Here's what I've come up with. And I contacted Lorenzo Alexander to ask him, am I seeing this right? So here's what I came up with. And, you know, we don't know exactly what was going on in the huddle. So what appears to happen here is the Pittsburgh Steelers, first of all, give them credit. They really schemed this up well. They take a linebacker who's lined up in the B gap to the right of the Bills, and he loops over to the B gap to the left of the Bills. So he's kind of to the right of Reed Ferguson, if you will, over the guard a little bit, and he loops to the left. In the meantime, Tyler Matakevich, who's the guard essentially on the play on the left, sees him coming. So his guy normally, who he's engaged with, he kind of pushes him off to Reed, to the A gap, because I got to get this guy. Okay, well, Reed was actually already engaged because a guy came across his face from right to left. Once he sees a guy right to left across his face, he takes him. So now he's got a guy going from right to left across his face, the long snapper, and a guy coming through that same gap on his left who Matakevich kind of pushed off to him. That's the guy that blocks the punt. So to me, and this is, I think Tyler should have waited to push that guy off because the threat was not there yet. You know what I mean? Like the threat from the looper hadn't come yet for him to do that. And then the last thing that happened and kind of sealed the deal, I just think Jaquan Johnson's eyes were in the wrong place, guys. Jaquan Johnson stepped up into that B gap where there was now the looper and the other guy instead of taking the guy that Matakevich pushed off. So nobody blocked that guy Matakevich pushed off to the A gap, and that's exactly who blocked it. So I think two things happened there, which was Reed Ferguson was already occupied, so he couldn't take him, and Jaquan Johnson saw the other two coming, so he didn't step to him.
All right, so add it all up. Like, to what degree are you sort of, what's the right word here? Just sort of like, you know, we're all curious about what it comes next for the Bills, right? I mean, very high expectations. How did Sunday, the sum total of that game Sunday, maybe heighten your your interest in what this is going to look like going forward? Or, you know, I guess if you don't know where I'm coming from, just as opposed to sort of like, yeah, you know, Pittsburgh's pretty good and sometimes you lose.
That is true, but this is a big game because of the way everything went down on Sunday, including the Dolphins beating the Patriots at New England. Even if they were to lose, obviously the season's not over, right? But my gosh, you're putting yourself in a much different position. I mean, just a few years ago, the Bills did go 0-2 and then won 4 in a row under Rex Ryan, right? You could do that. You could step and get off the mat. There's no doubt about that. This is a big game. I think it's a big game for what we think about this team, what it could represent for the season. It also could mean literally, like, I think there's a big swing here. You could go in this game from, oh my God, what is happening? This team is 0-2 or they're really struggling to, yeah, that was a blip on the screen. It was a speed bump, Pittsburgh. They weren't ready. Move on. That's what they were supposed to do. You could have that really wide range. So I am very interested. I do think that, you know, I believe a lot in the emotion and the how much it can affect a team and their play. And I think that Miami winning at New England actually last week might be beneficial here because I think they're going to come home feeling good about themselves. And yes, there's confidence. But typically, I think that when that happens, you might look a little bit less at the things critically that you do wrong to make adjustments, whereas I think the Bills are going to really look critically at the things they need to do, and I think that could play more into the Bills' hands, and maybe you have some sort of a letdown here for Miami.
Factor in here, too, we can mix this into the stew you're cooking on all this, Sal, that Allen has pretty much owned the Dolphins. Mm-hmm. Even prior to his becoming, you know, MVP candidate Josh Allen superstar, you know, his first 2 years in the league, his best games really were Miami games. Even the one they lost down there was a strong performance, I think, by him. So you've got that, too. Like, you want to get some panic in the fan base. Get the offense and Allen looking like they did on Sunday, which wasn't terrible, but it was not last year. Have that against Miami, and we'll have a fire burning all week next week.
Yeah, that's right. Sean McDermott and Josh Allen, I guess, are both 6-1. I'm sorry, Sean McDermott is 6-1 against the Miami Dolphins. Do you guys know the one loss in there? Do you remember the one loss?
Yes, Charles Clay.
Charles Clay.
That's right. It was the Charles Clay play at the end of the game, which there was debate on whether it was an underthrow or Charles Clay dropped it or whatever. Probably a little bit of both, right? But he has played really, really well. And if you go back to, know, his rookie year. I'm looking at his completion percentages now, 65, 61, 63, 68. I mean, he threw for a lot of yards. He threw for over 400 last year, four touchdowns. He has, I don't know, I got to look and see if it was him or Barkley. There were two interceptions last year. I think they were Barkley, but he didn't throw an interception in the previous three games. He's won like three Players of the Week awards just playing the Miami Dolphins, which is crazy in his career. But yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, you think about that, but then you also have to think about, okay, have the Dolphins, they know this is coming. They've faced them. Brian Flores knows. They don't want this to happen again. So, you know, how are they going to react to this? They have a very good secondary. They have good players and good talent. They're much more of a man-to-man defense than they are a zone. I think that could play more into the Bills' hands with the receivers that they have. So, you know, we'll see if they try to mix some things up. But I do think that's a scheme that the Bills will be able to maybe do a little bit of a better job against.
Very good. Sal, before you go, does Max play fantasy football?
No, but he knows about me playing and asks me which players I drafted.
Okay. I just had an epic loss to my son. It was great. Oh, you know, you love losing to your son, right? Like, my son's 11, and I want him to sort of take interest in it. So I checked the scores Sunday night. This is a 10-team league. We play for $10. Everybody puts in $10 this year. First year playing for money. And, like, I beat him 169 to 168, or so I thought. Like, it was some crazy score. It was 50 points higher than anybody else. And I'm like, Julius, tough one. You know, I show him the app, right? Yahoo, tough one. You had the second most points by a lot. And then Monday morning, getting ready for school, I just looked at it again, and the score had flipped. And he won 170 to 169. I'm like, dude, look, congratulations. I didn't even know. Did somebody else notice? Like, was there a certain player that got 2 points added to their score on overnight on Sunday? I don't know, but it was kind of a cool moment, like, because he was.
Well, did you notice? Did you look at it? What happened?
No, I don't know player by player. Like, I didn't notice it anywhere else, but the score changed. Huh. He has Mahomes and Tyreek, and, like, you know, he caught up almost all the way, but it was just kind of a cool moment to lose to him, actually.
Yeah, I'm sure. Like, if you're going to lose to anybody, right, have it be your son, but. So we had a really bad beat in our game this weekend. I actually was on the positive end of it, though. I played Matt Parrino in our Bills Media League.
I lost the same way, Sal.
Yeah, I was up by a lot, but he had a couple of Raiders, including Josh Jacobs and Daniel Carlson. If Carlson runs onto the field like he's supposed to and kicks the field goal, most likely I lose. He didn't, so I won by like a half a point.
Okay, well, I didn't have Carlson or need Carlson. I needed Carlson to kick a field goal so that Derek Carr didn't get a touchdown pass. That's what happened. I lost by two, and Carr got that overtime touchdown pass, and that's how I lost.
Isn't it the best?
So what was great for me, what was horrible for you.
Yeah, right.
Isn't it the best? All right. Sal, thanks.
Okay, guys.
There you go. Sal Capaccio on the Wester Hotline, and his appearances are always brought to you by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet?
There's just nothing like that ride on Monday night. It's dangerous, that rush, you know, like if you're betting a game or something like that. But the way fantasy just takes you on that ride, play to play. I need the whole strategy, the Baltimore, in the when it was tied, having that third down, and if they get – I was going to lose a game with my friend Mark only if the Tucker field goal were of a certain length. So if Jackson gets like 6 yards there, we're in the clear. It's first down, and this is going to be the end of the game. We're in the clear. So you had – it's just like the way a game is so play-to-play like that, your experience in overtime and Sal's. I mean, don't you love it?
Well, I didn't find out until the morning because it didn't keep me up. So
okay, wrong guy to ask.
I don't mean to mess with your. Generally, yes. If that game had been at 7 o'clock and I were watching, I would have been gripped by it. I mean, there would have been yelling and shouting, and I would have been texting with Owen and all kinds of stuff. As it turns out, I found out in the middle of the night when I woke up to a text from him going, "Tough one with that car TD."
Oh my gosh. I'm talking the main event. I wrote the column for the website today. It was two games in that tournament, which is more money than I've ever played for by far before. And one was this Tucker game, and another was there was a pass in overtime to Andrews. The play before Jackson fumbles, it's perfect throw right to Andrews, and he drops it. Like, that's his guy. And if Andrews makes that catch, then we lose the other one. So I got a little bit lucky. I mean, Andrews did not have – he had three catches, I think, in the game. Not a good night at all for him. Just like, oh, my gosh, that adrenaline. You can't go to sleep right there. Like, that's just another – there's another hour after that, at least for me.
Part of the reason why I didn't stay with it.
Yes, you might not want that in your life.
Listen, I have my fun, but if I were riding that ride until what time, 11:30
at least, yep.
Yeah, then I'm – you know, 7 o'clock comes awfully early, and I do have to get up now because I have responsibilities in the morning again for the first time in a year and a half.
Yeah, me too. My son is on the bus before 7.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a time out. 803-0550. The O-line is a topic, and we've been talking about that a lot here with respect to Sunday's loss. Lines are open. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, WGR.
The offense. Tua didn't make a Pro Bowl or a MVP case on Sunday. He just did enough to win. He managed the game well. He's going to pick it up. Our weapons are there. The way they're using Jalen Waddle is very impressive. Devontae Parker, he's going to catch the 12 to 15 yard passes all day on you. And our tight end, Mike Gesicki, can play. Not big numbers last week, but I think Gesicki is going to be a large piece of this team. But it falls back on Tua.
Morning show guest today, Channing Crowder. 560 QAM in Miami. He was a Dolphins linebacker for 6 years. Gesicki, he mentions Gesicki there. This game last year, week 2, Mike Gesicki was a beast for the Dolphins. But in week 1, he did nothing. And he's not even really starting. And they brought Adam Shaheen back today off the COVID list. They have a bunch of tight ends. Durham Smythe is one. Hunter Long is another they've drafted. I don't know about Gesicki. Sort of done with that guy, but maybe the Dolphins aren't. In this game last year, though, he was big.
I don't think they should be. I mean, I don't know. I'm not, like, studying him, but he looks like he has all the traits to be, you know, really good. Not like, you know, the best, very best guys in the league at the position, but good. Like, dangerous. Like, somebody you definitely would want on the field. So that's surprising to me that's going that way, maybe.
He only played 39% of their snaps week 1.
Yeah, like
Smythe
started 70.
Yep.
Yeah.
Hunter Long played 33%, and then someone named Sethan Carter played 24%. Sethan.
The names keep rolling off the tongue of
CeCe.
Dolphin tight ends.
His friends call him CeCe.
CeCe Carter.
Maybe, I mean, I don't know if you guys, with all your fantasy expertise, would know what his. Is he flawed in some way as an all-around player, like as a blocker? Is he, like, not so explosive, you know, in pass catching and running down the seams and all that stuff that you're willing to live with his flaws as a blocker? Is that the problem with him? Like, I don't know enough about him to know for sure.
I don't know enough about him as a blocker. I don't view him as, like, this dynamic player. Like, he's a good pass catcher. He almost reminds me of Zach Ertz. Like, he'll go out there and get open. But once he's got the ball, don't expect much more than that.
He's big. So, he's 6'6". He's big.
Yeah.
I don't know. I should know. I should have a better answer for you than I do. But I had it in my head. This is bad process. 2 or 3 years ago. Like, what, he's been in the league for a while. Mm-hmm. This is his fourth year. So in his second year at the latest, I had it in my head. Like, he's a no for me. So he's never on my team, Gesicki. Why? I don't remember. I somebody who was informed, well, sort of
playing
convinced
time could
me.
Be a thing that would deter you, right?
Well, I mean, that hasn't been a problem before. Like,
he's
had 89 targets, 85 targets, but not super productive. He's okay. He's been okay.
Yeah.
I feel like week 1, as we're saying, there was evidence that maybe on the decline as far as the Dolphins see it.
Yep. Maybe I'm doing with him like the opposite of what a lot of Bills fans, including me, did with Ryan Tannehill, which is like, he was bad against the Bills. I don't think he's that good. And turns out he's pretty good. And maybe Gesicki was really good against the Bills last year. And so I'm thinking he's this player that really he's not.
He really never has had a super high snap count throughout his career. Last year, he played 15 games and only played 58% of snaps. The year before that, which he played all 16, he played 65%, and the year before that, 44%. So that, without knowing exactly how he is as a blocker, that reads to me like the type of snap count of a guy that's not on the field when he's supposed to be blocking.
22 catches and one touchdown in his career against the Bills. So all in that game. Half of that is in that, and the touchdown is in that one game. Also 1-5 in those games. So I don't know. Maybe he's not a winner.
Tight end wins.
Tight end wins. Why doesn't he want it more?
Right.
What's wrong with him? Why doesn't he want it more? Hey, Joe, I've been waiting all day to see if Joe is ever going to play the Urban Meyer clip.
You want it?
Well, do you know why I'm asking?
Sounds like it.
You're saying
I think
every report is, and it's probably right, that he said there's no chance he would take the USC job. If there were a transcript of the question and answer, it wouldn't read like that. The question is, the guy is talking, you know, he's just trying to be all nice to Urban Meyer, right? Like, hey, this was bad for you yesterday when the USC rumors came out. The guy literally talks like that in the question. And I know you don't want to deal with it, but something like, I want to give you a chance to refute that. And as soon as he gets done saying that, Urban Meyer says no chance, which it's like a Bill Clinton moment where he probably means no chance. Not that it matters, right? Like, it's Urban Meyer. He could lie. Like, he just could tell you,
right,
I'm not going to USC, and then tomorrow I'll go to USC. So, like, he's not under oath. But he does – the guy – the questioner says, I want to give you a chance to refute that. And Urban Meyer then says, no chance.
Like, so no chance I'm going to refute
that? No chance
I'm
going to refute that.
Right.
Which he does – it's so quick that he's almost definitely not doing that.
But. Right. Right.
Who knew that Bill Clinton was pointing to a woman in the room when he said what he said?
I did see someone analyzing his body language, too, because after he says no chance, he kind of says how he's committed to this organization. But he's saying that,
yes. He's
mumbling and he's, like, hands in his pocket and he's looking down at the ground. And, like, the comment I saw was, like, that's really somebody that wants you to, that they really
committed.
Want to convince you that he's committed.
He is so committed. What has he ever been committed? What organization was he committed to? He gets in, he gets out.
He is, I don't know if you're bringing this up later, but he's high up the list of odds to be the next coach fired.
He is third. You and I saw the same email, I think, or you're just looking at the odds, but
yeah. He
is third. And there's a preface to the odds where they write, we don't think Urban Meyer is getting fired, but apparently our bettors do, or something like that. Because he's all the way up to third.
Right.
It's Nagy one, and then who?
Zimmer is tied with Nagy.
Zimmer?
Yes, plus 450.
Is that a thing? Really? Is that a thing?
I mean, they lost to the Bengals.
He's been there a while.
He's been there a long time.
They haven't done a lot.
I didn't think about him, but I guess somebody's betting
it. Sorry, both of them are plus 400. Meyer is the one who's plus 450. And then Joe Judge, plus 900.
Yeah, like, does
Fangio
he have to be...
Fangio opened the season as the favorite, and now he's plus 1,200.
Well, somebody respects that win. Not Bulldog doesn't respect that win, but somebody does. He's in a much better place having beaten the Giants, which, as you said earlier, is what everybody does on the first game.
Right.
They always lose the first game. They lose a lot of their games. I don't know. Like, Nagy is he obvious, or does it feel like they're... Like it did with Gase, where you just somehow internally, he's fine, and he's gonna just screw around. You know, that's not how he would describe it, but just like
right. You
feel like he can get away with whatever he wants. That's how it was with Adam Gase. Like, how is this still happening? How is this still the case?
Right, and what Nagy has that Gase didn't at the time is he's got the break glass in case of emergency, Justin Fields. Like, he's got that. He you know, I'm skeptical. I think he's holding off on that to, like, preserve his longevity. But, like, the longer I hold off on Fields, I'll get the chance to coach him, right? We don't want to have the kid have to learn a new system and all that sort of stuff. And so we'll see if that blows up in his face. I mean, I can't imagine with the way that they looked on offense on Sunday night that Fields is going to wait that long to play. I mean, we'll see. I would think organizationally there's going to be a lot of pressure there, and it's going to start mounting pretty fast. But yeah, I mean, I can't fathom that he's going to keep that job. But I think the way it's my opinion that his path to keeping the job is to hold off playing Fields as long as he can. Because if wow. he gets Fields in halfway through the season and he shows promise, well then, okay, like, well, the year is lost, but the kid is looking good in my offense, and so this is going to work, and, like, we don't want to throw that away, so let me keep going. I know that's kind of convoluted, but that's what I think is going on there.
Yeah, it's a game of chicken.
Yeah.
Man, the Bears being on that game, I hated it from the day it was released, the schedule. No. Like, how did Chicago get that game? And it was as bad as I figured. Like, I don't know why I didn't pick the Rams. I should have just put my chips down like it were where they – I was saying last week they shouldn't even be televised. You know, obviously I'm kidding, but just like, oh, no, the Bears. It's such a letdown. And then the game, it's Andy Dalton, and it's just – you just know, and you're right. It's like one of the few things about football that you can predict is that this is going to be bad. And they were the only team. Bulldogs, you know, they did not throw a pass 15 yards downfield the whole game. They were always losing. They were always losing the whole game. I mean, how do you not find something with that coach to fire him every week? They did not throw a 15-yard pass in the game. I mean, air yards.
Like even attempt one.
Attempt one. They did not attempt a pass. Allen Robinson might as well be Lee Smith. He's just running 3-yard slants. Allen Robinson. Poor Allen Robinson. He could bust it down the field. The Bears don't even want him to do it. So he's Lee Smith now. And Darnell Mooney, who's got talent, is Butch Roll. I'm only sticking with Bills, big Bills tight ends that only caught 2-yard passes. That's it. Come on. Come on, Bears.
Well, they're
just once in your life.
They're making up for it this week on Sunday night.
Yeah, probably. Baltimore is very shaky. Is it time to pick Baltimore now? 3.5 against the Chiefs? Who's going to bet Baltimore? I am.
-3.5.
+3.5,
I meant. Yeah.
It's the first time Jackson's been an underdog at home, I think. It's the first time they've been an underdog by more than 3 in his career. Like, who's gonna Bulldog, right? Buster? Who's going to pick Baltimore in that game?
I am not going near them. I don't know that yet, sitting here on Wednesday, that I would definitely take Kansas City either. But if I had to choose, I would take Kansas City. Like, if you make me pick the game, I'm taking Kansas City.
Sure.
Yeah, I don't – I think Baltimore, their passing offense just looked putrid. And, like, I know, they had the same problem the Bills had. They couldn't really block. But it just never comes out. Everything is just a sort of a scramble play, and I just think it's really tough to live like that. You know, I mean, you get some plays, you know. I think I made this point with somebody already this week. Maybe Sam Monson yesterday. Like, you got plays. Like, there's a little short pass to Watkins off a scramble that Watkins looked faster than I've ever seen him look in my life, turning upfield, got the corner, and you know, made a good gain out of
it.
He
should have scored.
Touchdown pass.
He should have scored.
Yeah. The touchdown pass to Brown was off of one of those kind of plays. I just think that's a tough way to live, and I don't have a lot of faith in their ability to throw it. And if they can't block, holy crap.
Well, that's right. They lost a lineman in that game. They've had all kinds of injuries. You know, they still win the game if they can stop Derek Carr. And they couldn't more than once, and they couldn't do it. You know, they scored enough points to win. But, that's kind of been the case with Baltimore. It's just like, who's in the mood to bet them against the Chiefs? That's a buster game. That is a buster game. I'm doing it.
Of course you are.
Yeah. Oh, 3.5. I mean, who wouldn't bet Patrick Mahomes, Kansas City Chiefs, -3.5 against any team at anywhere ever?
They would have covered that against Cleveland. They were down all day.
Right. They did not cover the actual line.
No, but that line.
But they won by four. They were down all day, and that's a good team. 803-0550, Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, with Sneaky Joe. This is WGR. Be caller 5 at 644-9878 for a chance to win a pair of tickets to see Trans-Siberian Orchestra Tuesday, December 21st at KeyBank Center. Tickets on sale to the general public 10 a.m. Friday at KeyBankCenter.com. $1 of every ticket sold, by the way, goes to Women's and Children's Hospital of Buffalo. WGR listeners, hang on a minute. You'll get access to tickets a day earlier. So tomorrow from 10 to 10, just use pre-sale code Xmas. It's just intoxicating, some would say. Some have said. Today is Dan Marino's birthday. How have we gone 3 hours and not just sort of made fun of Dan Marino? That's a big oversight on my part. It's always fun to do that. Dan Marino is 60 today. He was good. Got to say it. He was good.
Sure. If I'd known, I would have gotten him a nice pair of Isotoner gloves.
Yeah. Is he going to be mad that somebody mentioned his birthday?
He gets mad about just about everything.
It seemed like he was always mad.
Right.
And we talked about that the one day where we're talking about how when you watch the Dolphins with Marino, like any incomplete pass, he was just sort of, you could see it all over his face that he was mad somebody didn't run the right route or something. And Joe is like, I didn't realize this about Dan Marino. And he did in 5 seconds, he had a clip of Marino just losing his temper on Inside the NFL.
Right.
I've lost my temper in my career. Yes. I'm not saying, you know, that isn't true, but.
Over misspeaking, by the way. Like, he messed a
word
up.
Yeah, he messed up a word or the name of a player, and he's like,
break the table.
Yes, just like Don Music. Remember Don Music?
No. What?
Don Music from Sesame Street.
Oh, okay.
He would play the piano, and then he would miss a note. He'd be like, I never get it. I'll never get it. I'll never get it. He's banging on the keys.
Yeah, that rings a bell now.
Does it?
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't remember the name, but that sounds familiar.
Don Music. What a legend. That guy. Tomorrow night is Giants, Washington. Saquon Barkley.
Oh, my God. I cannot believe I said Saquon Barkley.
Did you do that on purpose?
I won't tell you. Okay. Saquon Barkley, questionable with his knee injury still. He's still ramping up. Washington, Ryan Fitzpatrick out. And so Taylor Heinicke will get the start. He played a lot in week one. I don't think a lot really went well in right. that game. You see,
he played pretty well in the playoffs last year for them.
Yeah, he did all right. I agree. See that incredible Terry McLaurin catch from last week? Oh, it's just amazing catch. Full sprint down the left sideline, jumps, and he's twisting while he's jumping. There's a guy on him, and still somehow he catches it and stays in bounds. Just incredible.
Yeah, I did see that, yeah.
Super good.
I saw a stat on this. I don't have it memorized. But the number of quarterbacks he's already played with is a stunning number of guys.
McLaurin.
Yeah.
Yeah, I bet. Just having only played for Washington.
Yeah, it might be 11.
Wow. Let's see if we can get a game going on that one.
There was a tweet about it earlier today, but I don't have it buttoned up. But 11 was in there. I think that's the number.
I can believe it. It's like 3 years, but I can believe it's 11. It might be. Brandon Cooks. There was a stat about Brandon Cooks. He has 100-yard receiving games with 5 different quarterbacks now, and they're good names. Tom Brady, Drew Brees, Deshaun Watson, Jared Goff, Tyrod Taylor. Cooks with Houston had a big game with Taylor in week one, and they upset Jacksonville. But he's been on it's different than McLaurin. He's been on different teams,
right.
Cooks. And he might be headed to another one, right? We've talked about that. Like, why would Houston not trade him? But they didn't, and he had a big week one. There's something, I'm looking back at these power rankings from earlier. Like, there's one thing here that I cannot believe got through. Well, if you missed that, we'll lay out what we did here, and I'll tell you what my big problem is. 803-0550 to reach us, Mike Schopen, the Bulldog.
You have to tell me what they were again, because I didn't write them down. So you said they're on Twitter, right? Yeah, okay.
And they're on Twitter. That's right.
All right. I'll go find them.
Back after sports on WGR.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All-star closer Kenley Jansen, we have a question.
What's the best podcast of all time?
Baseball isn't boring, baby.
I'm Rob Bradford, and every single day I'm sitting down with the biggest names to show you this great game is the greatest game. It's my podcast. It's my passion. It's a cause I started more than 2 years ago and is now the most prolific national daily baseball pod there is. Another fact, so jump aboard the BIB Express. Follow and listen to Baseball Isn't Boring, presented by Wasabi Hot Cloud Storage on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.